Evidence and Answers begins right now. This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Today, we begin our fifth teaching in Evidence and Answers 2025 conference series entitled, Can We Believe in the Bible? Hundreds of archaeological discoveries confirm the historical accuracy of the Old Testament. But in a world full of sensational claims, it can be hard to separate fact from fiction. From supposed chariot wheels at the Red Sea to sulfur balls at Sodom, many discoveries turn out to be false. Archaeologist Dr. Stephen Collins shows our listeners how to discern real archaeology from the fake and present powerful evidence proving the Bible's historical reliability. Now let's get right into part one of the fifth message in this series with a three-part study entitled Top 10 Archaeological Discoveries of the Old Testament. Now, here's Dr. Stephen Collins.
Pat always billed this as the top 10 archaeological finds that have supported the historicity of the Old Testament. More like 20. But Pat covered one already, didn't he? The Dead Sea Scrolls. And that certainly has to be considered one of the greatest archaeological finds of all time. Pretty amazing. But why does this subject matter anyway? Read this very carefully. Almost everything that's wrong with the world, nations, societies, governments, the United States of America, every state, every city, every town, every community, every family, you and me, is a direct result of failure to embrace three things: biblical historicity, a biblical worldview, and biblical principles. To the extent that we fail to do these three things, to that degree, our lives are damaged or diminished. So those are important things. Biblical historicity. So, does a person's attitude toward the Bible really matter? Well, it all depends on your perspective, I suppose, but from a Christian perspective, absolutely. It absolutely matters, because without the Bible, we don't have Christianity. It's the fact. That's where it comes from. It's the record, the historical record that we follow. But most archaeologists and historians don't believe that the Torah books, of course, Torah, first five books of the Old Testament, they don't believe those are actual history, but something like folklore or pious fiction, it's often called, saying that the Israelites were inventing a history for themselves. This also applies to the book of Judges and Joshua and Judges, so that would be part of that. And the reason I lump those together is because these are the Bronze Age scriptures. They're two major periods in which the Old Testament can be divided. The Bronze Age, and then of course at the end of the Bronze Age, there was a massive cultural disruption throughout the known world of the Mediterranean basin, the Near East. And so there's a big distinction, a huge difference between the Bronze Age world and the Iron Age world. They look very different. In fact, people in the Iron Age, that is, let's say the Israelites from the time of the united monarchy of David and Solomon all the way down to the end of the Old Testament, people living in that era would have found the Bronze Age very strange, very different, culturally distant from them. So it's a whole different world that is the Bronze Age scriptures from the Iron Age scriptures. So let's say the Hexateuch, first seven books of the Bible, Bronze Age, the rest of the Old Testament happens in the Iron Age. Now, since pretty much the Old Testament and the New Testament for that matter assumes the historical reality of the Bible's first seven books, then to call the first seven books into question is to call into question the factual legitimacy of these other books, the rest of the Old Testament and the New Testament. The New Testament affirms the historicity of Torah, or the first five books or the first seven books. The rest of the Old Testament assumes that. So, if we call into question the historical accuracy of Torah or of the first seven books, then we're calling into question everything. Here's another thing that's a little bit disturbing. Estimates from top pollsters report that upwards of 60% of Christians between the ages of 18 and 25 do not necessarily believe that the Bible is historically reliable. And I'm talking about kids in the best evangelical churches everywhere. The belief in the credibility of Scripture is eroding and continuing to erode. For most scholars and most of the general public, Adam and Eve, people like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, and Joshua never really existed at all. And so many Jewish rabbis and Jewish scholars believe the same thing. It's myths and legends as far as they're concerned. So the foundation of rejecting biblical historicity is this notion from the late 19th century in an era where archaeology did not exist. And this is an important point to remember. Isn't it funny or tragic that the principal theory regarding how the Old Testament was written was concocted in the 19th century before archaeology, before Near Eastern studies, before Near Eastern comparative literature? And in the 19th century, they believed that Moses couldn't possibly have written the Torah for a bunch of reasons, but the number one idea was, and this is like 1850s through 1900, scholars actually believed that the alphabet, when I say alphabet, I'm not talking about a writing system. Chinese is a writing system. Cuneiform for writing Akkadian in the Middle East is a writing system. Egyptian hieroglyphics is a writing system. They have hundreds. Writing systems have hundreds of characters. But an alphabet consists of between 20 and usually 20 and 27 letters representing the range of human vocal capability, making sounds with our vocal cords in our mouth. And with an alphabet, people can learn to read and write quickly. You don't have to be a professional trained scribe, because you realize that in antiquity, there was no such thing as public literacy. The only people who could read and write were the high-ranking officials, were the government officials and royals who could learn to be educated and read and write. 99% of the people in any population in the ancient world did not know how to read and write because they didn't have an alphabet. It's the alphabet that sets people free to be able to learn to read and write quickly. But that didn't exist until a moment that we're going to see in a minute. But in the 19th century, scholars were just convinced that the alphabet was not invented until the time of King David around 1000 BC. Now, if that were true, could Moses 400 years earlier have written the Torah? Not in that form. So scholars concluded, well, Moses couldn't have written the Torah. He must be a fictional character. He's sort of a literary kind of invention. He couldn't have written it because he didn't have an alphabet. There was no alphabet in Moses' day, if he even existed at all. And so they concocted a theory which could account for the existence of the Torah and the rest of the Old Testament. And so what they said was that sometime around the 10th century BC, around the time of David and Solomon, and shortly thereafter, that Jewish Israelite and Judahite priests decided to invent a history for their people and started writing it. And through various layers of writing, different authors, different editors, they compiled sort of through a piecemeal, scissors and paste kind of a process, what we come to know as the Law of Moses, the five books of the Torah, and the other books of the Old Testament eventually. Well, what happened? Well, what happened was that in the early part of the 20th century, the idea that the alphabet wasn't invented till the 10th century evaporated. And it evaporated in the worst possible way, because by the time we get to Flinders Petrie in the early decades of the 20th century, W.F. Albright then following on his heels, what Flinders called the proto-Sinaitic alphabet, many of us now refer to as the archaic Semitic alphabet, appeared first in the 15th century B.C., then other discoveries pushed it back soon to the 17th century B.C., and recent discoveries over the last 6 months possibly push it back to the 23rd or 24th century B.C., which that would even be before the time of Abraham. What's interesting about that is that the foundational idea of the conventional wisdom that Moses couldn't possibly have written the Pentateuch has evaporated and gone away. So why do so many Old Testament scholars still believe in this theory we call the documentary hypothesis, sometimes referred to as JEDP theory, after the different authors or different redactor groups or editor groups who supposedly put all of this together? Why do they believe it? Because the theory itself in the 19th century, pre-archaeology, as we said, was in a vacuum. It was concocted by Old Testament scholars for Old Testament scholars, not looking outside anything else out here. Just this tunnel vision on the Torah itself. And what they concluded was this crazy theory. But when all the archaeological discoveries and all the literature of the ancient Near East began to unfold and be discovered, and that theory couldn't hold water, the Old Testament scholars weren't aware of it. In fact, I'll tell a little story since we're open-ended with Norman Geisler. Everybody see Norm Geisler's picture here? A bunch of years ago, back in the 80s, I was flipping through channels, just, you know, as you do on Saturday afternoon, trying to find the golf channel so you can take a nap. And so you're flipping through that. And all of a sudden, I heard Norm Geisler's voice. And so I stopped. And what it was a debate. I think this was on the old John Ankerberg show. It was a debate between Norm Geisler and an Old Testament professor from Western Kentucky University. And they were about to have a debate on the documentary hypothesis. And I caught it just at the beginning. And so the first scholar up was this professor of Old Testament from Western Kentucky. And he got up. And the first sentence out of... Now, this guy has a PhD in Old Testament history. And this is, for some of you, ancient history. The 1980s. But here's what he said. First sentence out of his mouth was, Moses couldn't have written the Pentateuch because the writing wasn't invented yet. And the camera kind of panned at that moment over to Norm Geisler's face. And he was drooling like a dog anticipating a bone. And so you could just see it, Norm's beady little eyes waiting to pounce. So the guy got done with his little presentation, and Norm started just by shaking his head. And he was just exaggerating a little bit. He was saying, I can't believe what I just heard. I can't believe that anybody living in the 20th century could say what you just said. And he just mopped the floor up with the poor fellow. But you see, this is what Old Testament scholars today do in our colleges, universities, so many of our seminaries. They're not aware of archaeology. They're not aware of Near Eastern studies. They're not aware of all the discoveries. They just do this. They haven't had a new thought since the 1880s. Well, they need to, and that's what we're trying to do with our work, is to get them some new thoughts. That outmoded documentary hypothesis has been completely exploded by the archaeological evidence. So why do they continue to believe it And here it is. It's unfortunate, but it's really, really simple. It interferes with their personal lives. If the Bible is credible, then the stories of the Bible might just be true, which might mean the God of the Bible is also real. And if that's true, this is a problem for many of these people. They don't want God poking his nose into their business. It's uncomfortable. So they're willing to suspend reason and evidence in favor of doing their own thing. And the Bible has a word for that too. Sin. So sin gets in the way. People want to do their own thing with complete disregard for God. And that's why. It's not a matter of scholarship. It's not a matter of better science. It's not a matter of being smarter. It's a matter of personal choice. They choose to reject the truth of Scripture simply because they don't want God having his say in their life. That's all there is. Kent Kitchen. Pat mentioned Dr. Kitchen, University of Liverpool. I'm going to give you a quote from him, one of my favorite scholars. He says, increasingly extreme views about the Old Testament writings, that's the documentary hypothesis, have been trumpeted loudly, and all manner of gross misinterpretations of original first-hand data are now being shot forth. To prop up these extreme stances, like the documentary hypothesis, regardless of the real facts. And so we must firmly say, and here's what Kitchen says to these scholars. Your fantasy agendas are irrelevant in and to the real world, both of today and of all preceding time back to the remotest antiquity. Get real or, alas, get lost. We wish they could. And by the way, they tried to ignore Kenneth Kitchen as much as possible because he didn't take anything off of them and he didn't give them an inch. Well, so I've divided the historicity of the Bible into two sections, Iron Age and Bronze Age. Now, in my computer, it's reversed. I was going to give you the Iron Age first, but I'll give you the Bronze Age first. And if we get to the Iron Age, I may just drop it. Because the Bronze Age is what I want to focus on. Because the top 10 most important archaeological finds in most people's book, important finds for the Bible, are all in the Iron Age. And if we get time for those, we'll see. Things like Sennacherib's prism and the Merneptah stela and the Cyrus cylinder and the cylinder of Nabonidus, all which confirms details in the Iron Age scriptures and those later scriptures after the time of King David, and even things like the David plaque found in Tel Dan. But it's the Bronze Age scriptures to me that are amazing. Here's why. If the documentary hypothesis is true, and Moses didn't have a writing system, and the whole Old Testament is made up as a fiction starting in the 10th century, the 9th, 8th, 7th, 6th centuries BC, if it's that, and that's, by the way, that's the second half of the Iron Age, not even the whole Iron Age, the second half of it. And I call it the late Iron Age. So if the whole Old Testament is written in the late Iron Age, how in the world would it possibly preserve little tiny details of the Bronze Age throughout? It would be impossible. Someone inventing a history, a fiction in the Iron Age wouldn't have the historical means of including in their stories details that are so small and insignificant, but yet important. And in these places, we would get all kinds of Iron Age anachronisms. They would pull things from their own day to concoct stories, much like Joseph Smith did in his Book of Mormon, which he borrowed all the Bible stuff and he borrowed all the old world European and Near Eastern stuff and didn't have anything authentic from the Western Hemisphere at all, even though his stories were supposedly taking place there. It was all anachronism after anachronism. This is exactly what would happen if the documentary hypothesis were actually true. So I want to show you some things that can only be explained if the Old Testament scriptures, the Torah, the Bronze Age scriptures, are eyewitness accounts of people who actually lived in those cultures, understood those cultures, thought in terms of those cultures, and would have no thought about putting in little tiny minor details because they lived with them on a daily basis. It wasn't a big deal. But yet nobody in the Iron Age would have ever known any of this. So let's look at some of these. This is simple. It sounds so simple. But if you realize that the histories of all ancient people and all tribal people worldwide all the time put the center of creation, put the center of if they have a flood story, put the center of their, what we call their primeval history in their own land. They put it in their own place, in their own land. So this, their land is the center of the universe. Everything comes from that land. You know what's interesting about the Torah? That doesn't happen. From the get-go, even when we just get to Genesis 10, and we could even go back to the Garden of Eden and some of that, but what we have here is a picture of the Near East that's only revealed in the modern world. The cradle of civilization, that arc, that crescent, fertile crescent, that was not understood by historians until the modern era, till archaeology came around. So practically, it was the 20th century when the fertile crescent was understood as the cradle of all civilization. But the Bible nailed it already. If you go to Genesis 10, it gives you all the great cities of Mesopotamia. It gives you the great cities going down into the Levant, Israel and Jordan and into Canaan. It gives you all of that. And there it is. And by the way, Abraham's travels are pretty amazing, aren't they? Abraham crossed the entire Fertile Crescent from Ur all the way down there near the Persian Gulf, up over between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers to Haran, and then down into the western strip of the Fertile Crescent. He covers the whole thing. In other words, here we have the primeval literature of the Israelites, and it's giving us history that people only knew from the modern era. But yet there it is. It's in the Bible. It's absolutely incredible. Here's another one. Abraham's covenant. Now, Abraham made a covenant with Yahweh, and he made a covenant with his buddy Abimelech. Now, what's interesting about this is that when you study contracts and treaties, and Dr. Ken Kitchen wrote a massive triple volume set of the study of covenants, contracts, and treaties. And when you compare, when you look at the various archaeological periods, each archaeological era has covenants and treaties that match in that era, but they're nothing like the covenants and treaties from before that era or after. So the early Bronze Age covenants and contracts are structured completely differently than Middle Bronze Age contracts and treaties, which are different even than the late Bronze Age contracts and treaties. They're very, very different. And Iron Age contracts and treaties are the strangest, actually most simplified of all. But yet, when you come to Abraham's covenant in a period that precedes the Iron Age by at least 1,000 or 1,500 years, Abraham's covenant with Yahweh and his covenant with Abimelech are structured uniquely as Middle Bronze Age contracts. And they studied all the Middle Bronze Age contracts, Dr. Kitchen and his student, all of them.
Our time today has come to a close. Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number there is 483-0586. or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.